Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the second hour of At Your Service tonight. Dave Simons filling in, and I still have to get used to my new title, Partner and Managing Director. Okay, partner, write this down, Dave. Partner and Managing Director. I think I said in the first hour, founder. We had toyed with that, but it just sounded too highbrow or something for me. Partner and Managing Director of One Private Wealth, our new independent firm. And we're loving every minute of it. All right, so let's just talk about what is in my lane, and that is the financial markets, what's happening on Wall Street, what's happening with our money. There's so many moving parts, but let me take you back to start this hour's discussion here. 2 years ago this week, as we were heading into mid-October of 2022, the mood was very dour on Wall Street, to be honest. Investors were worried. Some were probably cashing out. Not probably, we know it, they were, which is very, very typical. A lot of people just give up too easily and then they live to regret it. But that's just what happens. That's the nature of our human emotions, that we just don't like the pain of losing money because somehow we get it in our mind that it's just not going to stop. And the only way we can stop the pain is just to get out of the market and we'll feel better. Never the right decision. But that's what was happening 2 years ago this week. The stock market was on its way to a 25% decline from the beginning of 22 to the bottom on October 12th. So we're coming up later this week, in fact, on Saturday, the 2 year anniversary of the bottom of the bear market that occurred back in 22. Now, I don't like to count what happened in the spring of 2020 as a true bear market. That was a not just once in a generation, more like once in a century event. We all know, of course, the pandemic, the forced economic shutdown, all that stuff. And the S&P 500 fell about 35% in 5 weeks from late February pretty much to the beginning of April. It was a five-week period. It was the worst five-week period to this day in the history of the U.S. stock market. The market has fallen more, but not within 5 weeks. But it wasn't your normal kind of bear market. There was nothing, it wasn't some kind of, it was a slow grind down because we had a recession because of corporate earnings were starting to deteriorate, or there was too much greed and the market was overvalued. No, this was just one of these one-off strange happenstance that occurs in history. I don't really count that when it comes to a true bear market. If you take that out, the 25% decline that we had through the first 9.5 months of 22 was the worst since the financial crisis of late 07 into early 09. The worst. So you had some people who said, I vowed I would never go through that time again. I couldn't stand it. Here we are 14, 15 years later, and I think we're going through it again. I'm out. You had others who were not even investing back then. Perhaps they were too young or they just didn't have the money. This was their first experience outside of that very brief five-week decline. Of course, everything popped right back up in 20. So before anyone could get overly panic, we had made our money back. This was different in 22. This was a true bear market. We all know what happened. 2 years later, here we are. The S&P 500 is up about 60% in 2 years. You should know that that is the fifth best 2 year return since the end of World War II. Let me repeat that, because we're talking nearly 80 years. That is the fifth best two-year return since the end of World War II. I'm not talking calendar year. I'm talking actual, just pick a date at the bottom of a bear market and to where we are 2 years later. So it just happens to be October 12th to almost October 12th. I don't think we're going to lose all of that 60% in just the last couple of days of this week. So I wanted to know then, all right, how many times, well, let's go back to the 80 years, to the end of World War II. And how many times has the market actually been up at least 2 years running, a new bull market? Yeah, you're going to have your little bit of a pullback here and there, but sustained bull market 2 years where the market's up more than 20% over a two-year period. You might be surprised it hasn't happened all that often. It's happened 12 times. But when you think about it, okay, 12 times 2 is 24 out of 80. Okay, that's a decent percentage. But what I wanted to know, how many of those 12 times do we make it 3 years in a row? I have this thing that I always tell clients, that gains beget gains. And that's just experience and that's history. That bull markets do not just die because they're long in the tooth. Just because a bull market has been going on for a couple of years doesn't mean, that means it's got to end soon. No, there has to be a reason for it. Bull markets just don't simply die of old age. We as human beings do, bull markets don't. There's got to be some sort of a catalyst. And I look at the catalysts here and I say, yeah, I mean, there are things that could happen. Geopolitical risks, I mean, do I need to even name them? A lot of people are very, very nervous about that. By the way, third quarter earnings begins in earnest later this week. So we have to make sure that earnings are still meeting or beating expectations. I don't think that that's going to fail. I think I'm okay with that. What if we get inflation that comes right back up and the Fed says, we shouldn't have cut, and then they start raising rates again? When you have a market that historically is valued on the richer side. So yeah, there are things that could happen. I don't see that happening though right in front of us. So in the previous 12 times over the past 80 years where the S&P 500 has been up 2 years in a row, 9 of those 12 times, the market made it 3 years in a row, including the last 5 times. The only 3 times where the bull market did end shortly after the 2 year mark happened a while ago. You're looking at the late 50s. And by the way, that third year, the market fell 6%. So it's not like things crashed. We had a very shallow recession back then in the late 50s. So that's what it is. Again, it's just a normal economic happenstance that sometimes occurs. We had a very shallow recession and we had a bull market for a couple of years in the late 50s. That third year, the market fell 5.9%. And then it started going back up again. The next time that we failed to make it 2 years in a go was a decade later in the late 60s. So 66 to 68, couple of years in a row, very nice return of 41% during those 2 years. And then the third year, the market fell 10.2%. Again, not a crash, not a major bear market, but it ended after a couple of years. Why? Why did the market fall in the late 60s? Inflation. The Fed, by the way, had cut interest rates as late as August of 68, and they did a big oops mistake. So they had to start quickly raising rates in 69, and the market fell 10%. Then we get to the third and final time, which occurred in the late 80s. Isn't that interesting? Late 50s, late 60s, late 80s. So the bear market bottom, no surprise, was right after the Black Monday crash of October 19th of 87. From there, the next 2 years, the S&P went up 54.4%. The third year after that, from October 89 to October of 90, the market fell 10%, even 10%, because we had a very, again, shallow recession. That's it, folks. All the other occasions, the other 9 times, the market was higher that third year. And even when it fell, it was down anywhere from 6 to 10% in the third year. So when I hear a lot of this fear-mongering that, oh, because we've had such a big run-up here the last couple of years, well, it's got to be near the end. We're going to fall 20 or 30%. Yeah, there's no guarantee we won't. But there's no history of that. Just because we've had a couple of years that have been very, very profitable for investors doesn't naturally lend itself to a belief that we are in for trouble. One of these other aforementioned geopolitical issues might cause that, but not just the market itself as a just because. I am still optimistic. Yes, even through the election, I'm not going to even get into that now. I've spent a lot of time on paper and commentaries and on the show how elections themselves really are not the market movers that investors fear. That comes down the road once legislative policies start to come in play over the next couple of years. But the election itself is typically not a market mover. And believe it or not, I don't believe it will be this time either. So there you go. Bull markets don't die of old age. Something else has to happen. When we come back, oh, I love this. I do this every year. It is a reminder. I'm going to get back to the history of annual returns and how economists, market strategists, and analysts year after year after year get their predictions wrong. They are worse than meteorologists. That is a cut down of meteorologists to even compare the two, as I will make very plain when we come back. Dave Simon's filling in tonight at your service, and we shall return. Right, a little bit of advice if any of you have kids or grandkids, perhaps, going into the business of, oh, Wall Street analysis. Let's say they do work for a big firm and eventually become a strategist. And one of their main responsibilities is to provide a prediction for the market of the upcoming calendar year. My advice for them to have job security is this. It's not that they have to be right. It's that they cannot be so far off the range and be wrong. If they're wrong, but they're just following the crowd, or they're wrong, but they just consistently year after year give a prediction that's near historical averages, they can have a really long life. It's true. If you were the only way to be right, by the way, is to make some kind of off the range, out of the comfort level, far off number, because that's where most of the returns are, which I'll get to in a second, is proof. And if you hit one, you can ride that way for a while, but you get a couple of those wrong and you're out of a job. It happens all the time. Some high profile people who try to be different. Again, the only way to be right is to be different. But man, you take a lot of career risk by doing so. I'm reminded of that this week when Goldman Sachs, very successful company, but they're like anyone else. They try to...
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Play it safe when it comes to market predicting. So Goldman Sachs this week, for the third time this year, had to increase their year-end S&P 500 prediction. Wouldn't that be nice if you could do that, like if you were betting or something? Well, I'm going to take the, it's over-under is 51 of this football game. Oh, we're halfway through the second quarter, and it's already over. You know, I'm going to up mine without putting another dollar down. You could just go in and do it. And that's what happens on Wall Street. So as the market has surprised virtually every analyst with its strength this year, a lot of these firms have just had to continually up their prediction just so they don't look overly foolish at the end of the year. So Goldman Sachs now believes that the S&P will end the year around 6,000. to put that in perspective, it closed today at 57.51. So they're basically saying they believe the market can go up about another 4.3% in the final 2.5 months. Now, that doesn't sound like much, but it does on an annualized basis. That's about a 20% increase on an annualized basis. So 4.3% in the next 6-7 weeks is actually pretty decent. But I go back to this whole notion that we as investors should even care about what these high-priced market strategists predict, because they are consistently wrong. Abby Joseph Cohen, who has worked at Goldman, I think her whole career, but at least as long as I've been in the business, so for many decades, she has made a career of predicting something that's always kind of in the safe zone, like 6 to 10%, because that's kind of the long-term average of the U.S. stock market, depending on the index you use and if you're including dividends or not, but sort of in that upper single digit to 10% range. And it's so funny. It's just every year I go, okay, what's Abby 7.8% prediction this year. Yep. And she's made a career out of it. Now, I'm not trying to purposely denigrate Ms. Cohen. She's done a fabulous job. She's very smart. A lot of the stuff that she talks about from a macroeconomic level, I find very enlightening. But she also is like everybody else when it comes to predicting where the stock market is going to go year after year. And that is, she's no better than you or me. There is no one who has that skill. Anyone who goes off the range and says, my employer is allowing me to make a wild prediction because I truly believe the market's going to be up 32% this year, or it's going to be down 25%, and I'm good with my employer, and he or she is going to let me make these predictions with job security, they have a much better chance of actually being correct than just going to that 6 to 10% range every year. Let me prove that for you. Let me find this. I actually put this on my weekly commentary at the end of every year just to update it. I've done this for a number of years, and it is so enlightening for people. I do kind of, it looks like an Excel spreadsheet, but without all the lines. And I list all of the year's annual returns since 1926. So, we're coming up on a century. I've been doing this for a while, and I think, oh, we're actually coming up on nearly 100 years that I'm putting on one slide or one graph that I show everybody. And I group the years in returns. On the far right, I have a column of the S&P being up 20% or more. That's the far right column. The one just left of that is the market's up 10 to 20%. Then it's 0 to 10, then it's down 0 to negative 10, then it's negative 10 to negative 20, and then the far left one is 20% down or worse. So you basically have six columns. And as soon as you look at it, it drives the point home, because the column by far that reaches all the way to the top of the page is the far right one. 35 of the last 98 years, the market's been up 20% or more. The next most is up 10 to 20%, 20 times. So that's 55 times out of 98 calendar years where the market has been up double digits. Did you know that? Did you realize that? How about down more than 20% of the past 98 years? So we're including even the Great Depression. We're including the horrible decade of the 2000s. How many times has the S&P finished down more than 20% in a single calendar year? Six times. The last time being in 2008. Again, it can fall more than 20% during the year. I'm talking about from beginning to the end. Down 10 to 20, it's happened six times again. So while the market has finished up more than 10%, 55 times, it's finished down more than 10%, 12. You are much better off as an analyst, if you have job security, because you will be spectacularly wrong sometimes, to actually have a double-digit gain. So here's one more thing that I did, and this is the favorite part of this exercise that I conduct every year, and that is, what if you did go between 8 and 12%? All right, you're like an Abby Joseph Cohen who kind of sticks between 6 and 10, but I'm going to go 8 to 12 because the S&P 500, using that index, has averaged close to 10% in its history. So you back off 2% on either side, or you go up 2%. So how many times has the market actually finished between 8 and 12% where so many analysts year after year decide that, that's where they're going to fall in for safety purposes? Four times. Four times out of 98 years has the market actually finished between 8 and 12%. One more example, and it's going to be an extreme one. And if you need one more nail in this coffin to really make a point, here it is. Now I'm going to get really extreme. How about predicting somewhere between 2 and 18%? I mean, come on. If I were just to ask you, okay, how many, I'm going to go back to 1926, nearly a century. How many times do you think the market's finished a calendar year between 2% to the positive and 18% to the positive? I think most people would say, oh, well, more than half, what, 60%, 70%? 24 times out of 98. We're talking basically one out of every 4 years is it, where the market has finished between 2 and 18%. And yet it has finished 19% above. 19% above. Not just 35 times, but 37 times out of 98 years. So let me leave you with that, my friends. Don't panic when the market's going down. It always comes back up. The market is a place for long-term investors, not speculators. Even professional speculators will occasionally take the ball-peen hammer to the eyes. If they're responsible enough, they won't wipe themselves out. Unfortunately, too many individual investors don't know that lesson, and they do let their assets fade away. Not necessarily because they stay in. No, that's the way to win. They're constantly cashing out at the bottom. And then when they feel better, when the market's hitting all-time highs, they get back in. And it is a vicious cycle. And they finally cash out and say, I'm done, after they've lost so much money. Don't be that investor. Know the stats that I just gave to you. It rewards long-term patient investors. And if you have some big purchase coming up, you've got a kid about to go to college this year, next year, you're going to buy a car, you're going to put a big down payment on a house. I always say, if you know that you need that money within the next 2 years, and if that seems a little too long for you, okay, at least give me 12 to 18 months. Don't put it in the stock market. These days, you can actually buy a CD and get decent returns. Even in the days where you could only get 10 basis points, I always said, it's not worth the risk. But anything more than a couple of years, especially 5, 10 years and beyond, absolutely, you should know these numbers and know that the vast majority of the time, the market is up double digits. And very seldom does it go down double digits. And when it does, it doesn't stay down there. All right, take a break and come back with more of our discussion on investing in the markets right after this. All right, my friends, welcome back. Dave Simon sitting in tonight. It's 9:37 in St. Louis. Yeah, one of the very common questions that I get is, so what is exactly the difference between these benchmarks that we hear about, you know, the indices? You've got the Dow, the Dow Jones Industrial Average. That is the most widely quoted and the most popular. And I think just because it's been around the longest. It was actually started way back in 1896. So yeah, a few years ago, by Charles Dow himself, who would go on, by the way, to start the Wall Street Journal. So a pretty important guy in the history of investing and finance. And so when somebody says, hey, what'd the market do? Oh, it was up 136 points. They're almost invariably referring to the Dow Jones Industrial Average. The Dow is 30 stocks. And it's a lot of your old line companies. You'll see an Alcoa there or a GM, but they do try to add some of the newer tech companies in there. So you'll get a Microsoft or an Apple sometimes. They do go in and out, but you'll get some of these tech names in there. But it's an old line industrial old economy index, the most widely quoted. The other one that you hear a lot is the S&P 500. Professionals on my side of the fence will normally look at the S&P 500 as a benchmark more than the Dow. Just like the name implies, the S&P 500 is your 500 largest publicly traded companies in America. Remember, the Dow only has 30. So the S&P 500 typically is a better barometer of what the market may have done in a particular year. Now, there's a couple of very important differences, though. I don't know that you should only necessarily follow one or two as a guide to really tell you how the market's doing. It really depends on how you are invested. If you tend to be a little bit more conservative and you have more traditional blue chip dividend paying stocks, the Dow is probably a better benchmark for you. If you're more diversified and you've got some higher growth stocks and you've got some tech stocks and you've got some new era stocks, the S&P is probably a more important benchmark. That's only for the index, or that's only for your stock portion. If you've got a diversified portfolio of bonds and commodities and all that, well, then, yeah, the S&P or the Dow is not going to be an appropriate benchmark because that those are all stocks. But here's the biggest difference between the two. What drives the Dow? How is it priced? It's impacted by the highest priced stocks. So, for example, United Healthcare is in the Dow, and it's the highest priced stock of the 30 in there. So if United Healthcare has a really good day, that will have the most influence on what the Dow does. Did you know that? They're not equally weighted. The lowest price stock may have a really bad or good day in the Dow, but it won't really move the benchmark at all. So it's really led by your top 5 or 10 highest priced stocks. The S&P has its own issues, but it's not affected by pricing. It's affected by the size of the company. So if NVIDIA, Microsoft, Apple, all of the big Meta, Facebook, all of the biggest names, if they have a good day, it almost doesn't matter what the rest of the S&P does. The S&P is going to have a good day. If your smallest 100 stocks of the S&P 500, smallest in size, have a really good day, you may not know it. If your top 10 of the S&P have a bad day. So there's no perfect benchmark. And let me throw in one more for you. It's the NASDAQ. That one gets quoted a lot too. That's your high octane baby pedal to the metal index. The NASDAQ is actually an exchange. It does have its own benchmark. Typically, we're looking at the top 100 stocks. And again, that's market weighted. So it's your top 100 largest companies in the NASDAQ. Anything with four symbols, typically, not always, is not perfect. So if you have Microsoft, MSFT, or Apple, or anything like that, Tesla, if it's got four symbols, it's typically going to be in the NASDAQ and not the Dow. There are exceptions, of course, Microsoft being one of the exceptions. The NASDAQ is full of your new era, new age, high-flying tech stocks, biotech stocks, AI companies. So if you have a little sliver of your portfolio that has, let's say, the so-called Mag 7, Magnificent 7, of some of those aforementioned AI stocks, you can see how you're doing by measuring it against the NASDAQ. Most people, though, should not worry about the NASDAQ as a benchmark. That's over. When the market has a really good year, like last year in 2023, the NASDAQ is almost always going to be your big winner. Then the S&P, and then the Dow. Conversely, in a so-so year, to flat or down, the Dow is going to hold up a little bit better. So in my profession, of course, I'll look at all three. But honestly, I don't look at any of them as a pure benchmark because everybody's portfolio is a little different. I just look at the three to give me an idea how the market do today. Oh, the high flyers did really good because the NASDAQ killed it today. That's exactly what happened today. Oh, the Dow had a really good day versus the NASDAQ and the S&P. Oh, that means the market had some problems today. Investors only wanted to get the safer, more traditional investments. I hope that helps a little bit, folks. By the way, one of the safest areas historically in the market is utility stocks. Utilities typically don't make people rich, certainly overnight. They're your steady Eddie. These are the so-called value stocks. Utilities will show up in the Dow. Why do I even mention utilities? Because guess what sector had the best performance in the stock market in the third quarter this year. The third quarter, which of course just ended last week on September 30th. Utility stocks. I bet you didn't know that unless you read it somewhere. Because we know the NASDAQ, the tech stocks, the AI stocks for the year have led. But they didn't do that great in the third quarter from June 30th to September 30th. It was more of your traditional value Dow-related stocks. Utilities of the 11 subsectors of the market were number one. The utility index in the third quarter was up a whopping 26.3%. Second, here's another old line, almost boring sector, financials, banks, mortgage lenders. That was the second best sector of the 11, up 19%. You know where the high-flying tech sector finished for that last three-month period? Almost down near the bottom. Technology was, where is it? Third quarter. It's escaped me. Oh, it's in the middle. Okay. It was up about 12%. At the very bottom, consumer staples. That's very interesting. What are consumer staples? Oh, stuff that you need. You go to the store to buy, or you go to Walgreens, you get your toothpaste, you go to Costco, you go to Walmart. Those are consumer staples, the stuff that no matter what the economy is doing, we have to buy a toilet paper, right? And toothpaste and our cereal. Those are consumer staples, and they virtually did nothing in the third quarter. But I get back to the utility stocks. Who would have predicted it? What did I start out this past segment talking about, the one before, about no analyst, no matter how well they're schooled, no matter what kind of degree they have, no matter what kind of experience they have, no matter how much money they make, they are no better than you or I when it comes to predicting near term what the market is going to do the next 3 to 12 months or what sector is going to lead. I can tell you with certainty that there was nobody in June, these professionals were saying, you know what's going to lead the market the next 3 months? Boring utility stocks, and utilities or technology stocks won't be anywhere near. You come up with your own unique plan that fits in with your risk tolerance. You better know your risk tolerance. There are people who can stand and stomach lots of volatility. There are others, though, that can't hardly take it when the Dow drops 5 points. Know who you are. There's not a right or wrong answer here, folks. There's just you. Invest like it, all right? And stick with it through thick and thin, and you will reach your long-term goals. We'll be right back. You know, I'm always reminded how quickly 2 hours goes by when I do this show. It just seems like I sat down and, oh, it's about time to sign off again. But it was a pleasure, and I'll let everybody know in the weekly commentary when I'll be returning, whether it's filling in on At Your Service or a Sunday Dollars and Cents show. I imagine that the frequency of appearances will start to grow a little bit now that baseball season has been winding down. Let me turn to hockey real quick because I just flashed up here. This is great. So again, congrats to our local hockey team, the St. Louis Blues. They started their season tonight with a 3-2 come-from-behind win up in Seattle. But who are the Blues' biggest rivals? Right, historically, it's been the Chicago Blackhawks. So I love to tweak them a little bit when I can. The Blackhawks are starting their season tonight in Utah. Yes. If you don't follow it that closely, Salt Lake City and Utah has its first ever professional hockey team, at least in the NHL. And you know what their name is? Man, this is exciting. I wonder if they spent millions of dollars coming up with this. The Utah, get this, Hockey Club. Yes! How exciting is that? I can't even imagine the great unveiling of that when they put down the red curtain and they said, there it is, the Utah Hockey Club. And the logo is as boring as its name. Now, in fairness, they supposedly are going to come up with a name. They just didn't have one in time for the beginning of the season. I mean, they've only had a couple of years, I guess, but eventually they'll come around to it. It sort of sounds like what the soccer teams do, right? That they come up with the you know, the city name or the club or whatever, Utah Hockey Club. But anyway, they're up on the Blackhawks right now, 2-0 in the first period. I say go Utah. All right. I've got some numbers here that are staggering to me. They're unrelated, but I want to leave you with these because I'm a statistical nerd and geek here. First of all, you know, our deficit now is getting into the mid 30 trillion range, and you can't get your mind around that. Like, okay, that's a large number, but what? I don't even hardly know how to picture 1 trillion of anything, let alone 35 trillion of something. Well, how about this one for size? 40 trillion. Okay, what's 40 trillion? That's the gallons of rain dumped on the southeast by Hurricane Helene. 40 trillion gallons dumped because of Helene. I don't even know what that means other than that's a lot. And now, of course, we have the new one, Milton, coming in. And as I started off the show talking about, I'm in the southeast right now, not in Florida, just a little bit north of the Georgia line into South Carolina. I'm supposed to fly home Thursday morning out of Savannah. At this point, I think it looks okay, but Southwest has already been sending the warnings. Hey, you just better make sure, because Savannah is in the area that could be impacted by travel time starting late tomorrow and through Thursday, Friday into the weekend. So I hope to get back home if I can. If not, my car is down here and I can always just drive. Anyway, here's another number for you, completely unrelated to the weather, but man, is this impacting the second largest economy in the world, that being China. And it's this: 90 million. Okay, 90 million what? That's the number of empty housing units in that country. That's the equivalent, if you just say three per people per home, that's the equivalent of about 270 million people. The entire population of the U.S. is a little bit more than 330 million. That, think about that for a second. We all know that China went crazy in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, just building and building and building. It was almost like build it and they will come. That's what they were expecting in their housing. And yet that's one of the reasons why their economy has just really fallen apart. Their stock market really jumped late last week and early this week because of allegedly some new stimulus coming in. But they backed off that today and Chinese stocks got hit hard. I can't tell you what to buy, sell, hold, or anything. All I'm telling you is if you're an investor in Chinese stocks, you might be just a little careful. It's too volatile for us. I can just speak for me. We're not investing there at this time. And when you see stats like that, where you have almost an entire sized country of the U.S. that's sitting in empty housing units, that's all I need to know. Folks, have a great rest of your week. We'll hope to talk to you very soon.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.